Residents of Kyiv finally get a restful weekend, but people in other parts of Ukraine were not so lucky.
Unfortunately, on Saturday, a very powerful explosion was heard in the city of Dnipro, and it was heard before air raid alarm was on.
The rising number of Ukrainian children killed or deported to Russia, which the International Criminal Court is investigating.
This is the different degree, is a higher degree of war crimes.
And later in the program, an art exhibition in Warsaw, Poland, brings together the work of Ukrainian artists who aim to capture the brutality of Russian aggression. Today is Monday, June 5th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Lori London in Washington. Residents of Ukraine's capital got a break over the weekend after weeks of Russian bombardment that caused many sleepless nights. But other parts of the country didn't fare as well. I talked about it with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
Kyiv has just been under constant attack, and it sounds like at least this weekend was a little bit more quiet than you even expected or in a while.
You're absolutely right. If we're talking about the month of May, we're talking about 20 nights of shelling out of 31. So really, it was more nights and days of shelling than and early mornings, let's put it this way, of shelling than no shelling. And over the weekend, it was more or less silent in Kyiv. So for two nights, Kyiv citizens had a chance to sleep. To be honest, a lot of people in Kyiv have already, you know, got used to this sleepless night. But of course, everyone had a dream of sleeping finally. So this was quite a quiet weekend. However, it was not quiet for the city of Dnipro. Unfortunately, on Saturday, a very powerful explosion was heard in the city of Dnipro, and it was heard before air raid alarm was on. So explosion happened and then air raid alarm was on. What we know is that it was a missile hit in between two residential buildings, and of course there are damages of the residential buildings. What we know in terms of victims and injured, at least 22 people are injured, and this includes 5 children. And unfortunately, we had confirmation that at least one child had also died. A body of 2-year-old girl was found under the rubble.
And I understand that the commanders from the Ukrainian ground forces have been visiting the front line and reporting on Ukrainian advances. What are you hearing about that?
Yes, over the weekend, Oleksandr Sirsky, who is the commander of the ground forces of Ukraine, has visited one of the battle directions, the frontline areas in the east, in the Donetsk region. He was checking on the situation. He was basically conducting a number of meetings to agree on the further steps of the Ukrainian armed forces. He, of course, didn't give particular details on his location or on the location of his visit, but he said that future operations are planned in that area, and he discussed this with the military who is currently located there. He also reported on some positive advances, counter-offensive advances of the Ukrainian armed forces in that area. What we know is that this is Svativ direction, but we don't know more, so basically, it's one of the areas in the east part of the front line. And this comes, of course, as a very positive confirmation from Ukrainian top military official, because for weeks now, we're not really hearing a lot of details on any advances in the area of eastern front line.
And Pope Francis has been calling for peace in this war to stop for months now. He's been concerned about it and very focused on it. I understand that one of his representatives will be coming to Kyiv.
It should be today and tomorrow. That peace representative from Pope Francis will come to Ukraine. We don't have for the moment confirmation that he is already in Kyiv. However, we might get this confirmation later on. This visit comes right after President Zelensky meeting with Pope Francis when President Zelensky was in Italy during his trip to Italy. And what we know for now that this peace representative from Pope Francis will listen to Ukrainian leadership, Ukrainian side, basically, in order to understand Ukrainian position on peace and on how Ukraine sees this long-term peace, what is very important. And this was highlighted, long-term peace to be found and long term peace plan to be implemented. So this would be the main topic for the discussion, and this is the main reason for the visit.
Anna Chernikova, reporting for VOA from Kyiv. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky used his nightly address Sunday to remember the children who have died as a result of Russian aggression since 2014, including the child in Dnipro region Saturday. Zelensky said that 485 children have lost their lives from Russian attacks, but noted these are only the number officially confirmed, and the actual number is likely much higher. And according to President Zelensky, more than 19,000 Ukrainian children have been forcibly deported to Russia or Russian-controlled Ukrainian territories. Only a fraction have been returned, including Olena Dudnik's son, Andriy. Lisha Bakalets has more on one mother's ordeal.
This is very risky. These parents, these guardians are not 100% certain to return with their child.
Russian authorities don't deny they take children out of Ukrainian territories, but they don't call it deportation. Russia's permanent representative to the UN, Vasily Nebenzia, said this was done to protect children from the danger of military operations. Regardless, the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin, accusing him for a personal responsibility for the unlawful deportation and transfer of children from Ukraine. Magdalena Gavin, director of the Pilecki Institute, a Polish government-funded group dedicated in part to studying totalitarian regimes, thought the decision was crucial.
This case is particularly important because it's a part of crimes against humanity. So this is the different degree, is a higher degree of war crimes.
Olena Dudnik managed to take her son back from Moscow, and Ukrainian volunteers helped them find temporary protection. But Ukrainian officials say so far fewer than 400 children like Andriy have returned. Lesya Bakalets for VOA News.
Russia has released drone footage claiming to have thwarted a large-scale offensive by Ukraine in the Russian-held Donetsk region, killing more than 250 people and destroying dozens of armored vehicles. From Reuters, Almond Lee reports.
Russia on Monday claimed that its army foiled a large-scale offensive by Ukraine in the seized region of Donetsk and killed more than 250 pro-Kiev troops. The Russian Defense Ministry released drone footage of what it claimed to be Ukrainian armored vehicles in a field blowing up after being hit. The ministry spokesman said Ukrainian forces launched the attack on Sunday morning, but, quote, had no success. He added the Russian side killed 250 enemy troops and took out 40 military vehicles, including tanks. Reuters was unable to immediately verify Russia's claims, and there was no immediate comment from Kiev. In a Wall Street Journal interview published on Saturday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said his country was ready to launch a counteroffensive, but he made no mention of the assault in his regular evening video address on Sunday. It was unclear whether the reported attack by Ukraine signaled the start of a long-expected counteroffensive to recapture some of the territory taken by Russia after last year's invasion. Meanwhile, there has been constant shelling along the Ukrainian-Russian border, destroying homes and killing civilians. An eyewitness on the Ukraine side said she saw two women being killed.
Two women came here after shelling started, one from this house and one from the other. They stood here for 2 minutes talking to each other, and a second shell explodes here. I was thrown behind the wall by the wave from the explosion, but one of the women, her hand was torn off, and the other one died immediately. The woman who lost her hand died shortly after.
Ukraine forces have also been blamed for some of the cross-border shelling. Kyiv denied direct involvement, but has cast them as a consequence of Russia's invasion.
Almond Lee reporting for Reuters. Meanwhile, Ukraine's military said Monday it had no information about a major offensive launched along the front line in the Ukrainian region of Donetsk. Belgium is probing whether arms destined to defend Ukraine have ended up in Russian hands. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma has the story.
Belgium's investigating whether weapons it sent to help Ukraine have been used in Ukrainian fighting just over the border, following a news report that says equipment produced by a Belgian company has turned up around Russia's Belgorod region. However, Belgian Prime Minister Alexander De Croo has warned against jumping to any hasty conclusions, since he says shipments over decades and different regions can make arms turn up in unexpected places. The Washington Post published extensive reporting over the weekend saying that arms from some NATO countries had appeared in the Russian region, which borders Ukraine. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin at a news conference in New Delhi, India, Monday, addressed the question of whether U.S. weapons given to Ukraine may have been used in recent attacks in Moscow.
I think the Ukrainians have been, by and large, really transparent in allowing us to access those areas we need to access and look at what we need to look at. And we will certainly maintain the stance that the equipment that we provide is for use in their defense of their sovereign territory. And again, we'll continue to refine our in-use monitoring capabilities as well.
Austin did acknowledge that tracking how weapons and other military systems are being used is difficult. On May 25th, Russia moved forward with plans to deploy tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus, 2 months after President Vladimir Putin first announced Russia would station such weapons in Belarus. We hear more from Polygraph Info.
On May 25th, exiled Belarusian opposition leader Svetlana Tsikhanouskaya condemned a Russian-Belarus agreement to deploy tactical nuclear weapons on Belarusian territory. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said that Moscow had given the Belarusian armed forces Iskander-M missiles, which can carry nuclear warheads. He also said some Su-25 jets had been converted for possible nuclear weapons use. Tsikhanouskaya said the nuclear weapons agreement with Russia violates Belarus's constitution and its international obligations. The deployment of any kind of nuclear weapons in Belarus is not only a violation of international commitments, such as the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and the Budapest Memorandum of 1994. It also violates our non-nuclear status under the constitution. That is true. Under the Budapest Memorandum, Belarus agreed to renounce nuclear weapons in exchange for security guarantees by the US, United Kingdom, and Russia. Belarus also pledged to remain non-nuclear by signing the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and including a nuclear-free provision in its 1994 constitution. Moscow and Minsk claim that deploying Russian nuclear weapons in Belarus does not violate the NPT, since Moscow says it will retain control over the missiles. However, echoing Tsikhanouskaya, the European Union's chief diplomat, Joseph Borrell, said the deployment goes against the commitments Russia made under the Budapest Memorandum.
Polygraph Info is a fact-finding website produced by Voice of America. The website serves as a resource for verifying the increasing volume of disinformation and misinformation being distributed and shared globally. President Joe Biden is welcoming the prime ministers of Denmark and Britain to Washington this week for talks that will focus heavily on what's ahead in the war in Ukraine. That includes the recently launched effort to train and eventually equip Ukraine with American-made F-16 fighter jets. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. In collaboration with the Ukrainian government, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, has created an app that connects Ukrainians with their governments so they can access public services, and use of the app's code has expanded to different countries. Irina Matvichuk has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Last week in Washington, Samantha Power, the administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID for short, praised Dia, an app developed by the Ukrainian government with the support of her agency. The app allows people to connect with their governments. In Ukraine, for example, citizens use the app to report Russian soldiers in their midst and to pay their taxes. Power spoke about how her agency will help other countries use Dia.
I am thrilled that USAID will be working with Colombia, with Kosovo, and with Zambia, for starters, to explore collaborations on everything from improving their current systems to developing new digital citizen services.
USAID Assistant Administrator Aaron McKee said citizens of different U.S. partner countries will use different app features depending on their needs.
Zambia may just want to have an e-passport, you know, so it makes it easier for citizens to travel. Or Kosovo may be looking at the government procurement system and looking at, I don't know, open bidding and using an app so that citizens understand what their tax dollars are going for.
Valeria Ianan, deputy minister at Ukraine's Ministry of Digital Transformation, told VOA that one country, Estonia, is using the technology and that many more will likely follow.
Estonia, the most digitally advanced country in Europe, which Ukraine learned a lot from, they are adapting our experience and have created an app based on our mobile app Dia. We're currently engaged in negotiations with 15 countries regarding the app.
USAID says that Dia will help citizens more easily connect to their governments and that it has full faith in the app's safety.
People's information is already in digital format globally, including in the United States. What's critical is to compartmentalize and protect that information. So even if you are hacked, they can only get one piece or access to an element and aren't able to do as much damage, particularly to critical infrastructure and personal information.
McKee also explained how, thanks to Dia, USAID can help Ukraine in various ways.
So we are expanding both DIA, the accountability and transparency agenda, and helping accelerate EU accession, particularly in anti-corruption and reform. We also have invested heavily in the energy infrastructure, both to protect and get Ukraine through the winter.
As of May 2023, some 19 million Ukrainians are using the DIA app. For Irina Matvichuk in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Russia's foreign ministry said Monday that it saw no prospects for extending the Black Sea grain export deal, which is set to expire in mid-July. The deal was originally brokered by Turkey and the United Nations last July to allow Ukraine to resume exports to its southern ports, which had been blockaded by Russia since the start of its invasion. Meanwhile, a poll of global attitudes regarding Russia's war in Ukraine suggests the West has regained its unity and sense of purpose following the invasion. The survey, conducted across 15 countries, shows markedly different attitudes, though, in non-Western nations, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Most Western leaders have rallied behind Ukraine in the face of Russia's invasion, and they have warned of the threat posed by Moscow. The poll by the European Council on Foreign Relations suggests citizens in these countries largely agree. Susie Dennison is a co-author of the report.
There is a general agreement with the idea that Ukraine needs to regain all of its territory. And that has grown in the European countries that we looked at since we asked a similar question last summer.
The report says three factors have driven Western unity: Ukrainian successes on the battlefield, the way the war has united the political left and right, and the perceived return of a strong West led by the US. Europeans also feel they have weathered a difficult winter, despite high energy prices caused by Russia's invasion. Again, Susie Dennison.
We can sustain economically the position that we're taking against Russia, and that we need to do so because of the nature of the war that Russia is fighting, that it threatens the fundamental rules on which the international order is based.
As Russia tries to take more territory in a spring offensive, the report authors say Western leaders should exploit the public support for arming Ukraine. Again, Susie Dennison.
Military aid and support in dealing with that is needed now, because if it starts to look like this is not something that that the Ukrainians can push back against, then we could see the support among Europeans begin to dissipate.
The same poll conducted in China, India and Turkey gave very different answers. In these countries, majorities favoured a quick end to the war, even if Ukraine has to concede territory. Again, Susie Dennison.
You have strong majorities that say Russia is either an ally or a necessary partner. They see a world of multipolarity in which they are going to have to form pragmatic, relatively interest-based alliances.
Most respondents in Europe and America expect a bipolar world dominated by the US and China. However, a majority of citizens in non-Western countries expect a fragmented global order, with several competing powers making up a multipolar world. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
An art exhibition in Warsaw, Poland brings together the work of Ukrainian artists who aim to capture the brutality of Russian aggression. The exhibition is entitled Ukraine Under a Different Sky. For VOA, Lizia Bakalets reports from Warsaw while Elizabeth Chernev narrates.
These are the sights and sounds in Ukraine Under a Different Sky, an exhibition here at the Ujazdowski Castle Center for Contemporary Art in Warsaw. Visitors listen to the sounds of war in a dark room with scenes of the frontline city Kharkiv displayed on the walls. For some, the exhibit can be overwhelming. Beta Lupinska-Reitel is the museum's deputy director.
It was a couple from Ukraine, which I saw. They were in this room, and they just break out and start crying.
The exhibition includes 200 works documenting the impact of Russia's war on their homeland by Ukrainian artists, including Olga Drozd. Every piece of art here tries to answer one question: how is this horror real in the 21st century? The exhibition demonstrates war not only generally, but through artists' personal experiences. When Russia started the war, Drozd began taking photographs of her kitchen window in Kyiv. The items on her windowsill changed, and over time, so did the weather, but the glass window has remained unbroken. This exhibit is entitled Thank You for Another Day. I just walked in my kitchen, looked at these red curtains and thought, thank God, the windows are intact today. I'm alive. I live near the thermal power plant in Kyiv, so my house often shook from the explosions. In the next room, a bed is pierced with broken glass. Black paint is splattered all around. Artist Yulia Zakharova says it reflects how scared she feels when explosions wake her up.
For me, it is an association with my own bed, in which I woke up when full-scale aggression began. I panicked and did not know what to do next.
And you know, the bed is something so sacred. It is something where we rest, where we feel safe. Museum officials say the displays are meant to evoke empathy so that visitors can feel what life is like in Ukraine as Russia continues its attacks.
When you come into the exhibition, you can actually feel it more, what's going on at the moment. Through art, you can explain the war in a different way. It's much more emotional. It gets into your heart. We don't want people to get used to the war. We want people to talk about that Ukraine needs to be armed and need support all the time.
The exhibition in Warsaw runs to mid-May. For Lesia Bakalets in Warsaw, Elizabeth Chernev, VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.